What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to Landing on the Plains, all things Auburn football from someone who really lived it. All right, here we go. This is a special one today because joining me today is my brother. This was my best friend when we was at Auburn, and this is the power of a place like Auburn and doing what we love, playing the game of football, because you bring people from different backgrounds, different areas, and you build bonds that last a lifetime. And so we came in together. We did pretty much everything together. He was my best man at my wedding last year. I'm the godfather to my second son, none other than Malcolm Askew. Excuse, what's going on, bro, Baines?
Man, what's going on, bro, Baines?
Yeah, man, I appreciate you coming on today, man. I appreciate you for sure.
Man, I appreciate you for having me, man. I know we've been talking about stuff like this for a long time, man. I'm glad it's coming to fluidity and God doing great things, man.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So we're not going to waste no time. We're going to hop straight into it, man. So I just got done, obviously, alluding to the brotherhood and the bond that you build while you're in school, right? And so just talk to me about that piece of it, right? And because obviously everybody talks about the on-field stuff, the football, the wins.
Yeah.
You know, all of that kind of stuff, but what they don't see is the behind the scenes, like the bonds and the camaraderie and the relationships that you build. And so ours in particular, just talk about that and like what the relationships were like when you were at Auburn.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, man, as far as like a lot of people don't understand nowadays, even as classes come in together, like even for us, you know, when we've early enrolled and at that point, that's when the early enrollment kind of took place and it was starting to kick off and all that type of stuff. And when we came in together, you know, you got 20, 25 guys that might join in from out of high school. And then at that time, we had a few transfers that was in our class as well that came from other places like Cam Martin, Jared Stidham, and guys like that, Sal Canella. So, you know, you get there and everybody's new, we're fresh, you're on campus, and you know, you're just trying to figure everything out. You know, nobody knows what's going on. You just know you got to be somewhere at a certain time. You know, you got to do this. Like, they just telling you, but you like, it's hitting you like, man, it's a lot of information at once. I got to do all this in a whole day. And so, you know, it takes a different person to handle all those things. But at the same time, if you can establish a relationship with somebody and a tight partner, a tight teammate, a brother that's going to help you along the way, then that's the biggest thing, right? And as a class grows, you know, just helping each other understand one another and knowing you're doing everything together. And if you can do everything together, it all ties into the football field, right? And so as we're coming in as freshmen, you know, you're going to tutor, because they put everybody on the same schedule. So you're basically going to travel together, right? And so as those things continue to unfold, you're doing all these things together and then you're staying on track. And as long as you can keep doing those things at a high standard, you know, everybody's doing everything, holding each other accountable and being on time and knowing, you know, we're in this thing together trying to build something special. And each year you're trying to build on that, then you're going to be all right. And that's how you kind of establish that. And then as time goes on, you know, you get tight with certain people. Like, as far as us, you know, we knew what we was trying to do and the goals we was trying to accomplish. And so as time goes on, of course, everybody is going to be on that same page and trying to align. And in the beginning, everything is good. Everybody trying to be on one accord. But as time goes on, people start to fall off. People start to start missing things. People start being late. And so now it starts separating people. You know, you start separating people who trying to be great from the middle class to the bottom class. And then, you know, that's how brotherhood is either going to stay strong or it's going to fall off, right? And so I think, you know, for us, you know, we always kept that bond and holding each other accountable and trying to do the right thing, right, and staying the course. And also, we always brought good energy around each other. And then it was genuine energy. It was genuine fun. It was genuine brotherhood. It was genuine hardship. It was genuine, you know, everything that we had to do. And rest in peace to Brother Chet. But, you know, we build a brotherhood through that, too, through going to those devotions and sitting down with him. And that only dives you deeper because at that point, you know, it's hitting you spiritually, you know, also. And so, you know, you take the time to do those things and then a brotherhood only grows from there. And I think that was just the biggest thing, you know, as far as us and how things went down, you know, with our relationship.
Yeah, no, I think you hit on a lot of key points. And one thing that really struck and stuck with me was when you was talking about building stuff, because nowadays, you know, a lot of guys is transferring in and out, and, you know, yep. a lot of classes aren't finishing with each other the way they start. And so I don't think these guys really even have that opportunity to really even build those kind of long lasting relationships. And maybe there are some, like, I'm not speaking for everybody, right? But just generally speaking, like, it's hard to build those kind of relationships in 1 year. That's, we built that over 5 years, over a long period of time, right? Yeah. And so, like, when you got guys in and out of the, you know, off the roster, and everything is so ever evolving, it's hard to do that. And so I definitely agree with you on that for sure.
Yeah. And I think that's the major part of it. Like, now that I played in it, right, and we were a part of that, and the portal didn't really come intact and full on fledged until around 1920, like that time frame, and then 21 it really took off. So, you know, now that I've gotten out of ball and not playing, and now I'm coaching and I've been director of recruiting and all that type of stuff at a P4 level and whatnot, like, people on the outside don't understand, you broke up all the brotherhood and the culture and building something from the ground up. Now it's, I mean, even coaches and strength coaches, they got to adjust every year on restarting either a weight program or restarting this for new people to adjust. And so if you don't have a good culture, that thing gets broken up every year, and it's almost like a restart every single year. And so
I think that's crazy you said that too, because that's literally what I'm leading into next. Like, just with the whole entire, like, you being a director of recruiting, you being in that space, like, NIL has changed the entire landscape of college football, right? And so you have that unique insight. And so I really just want to hear from you, and, like, having worked at Missouri in that kind of field, in that space, right, big time SEC football, like, what are some major differences in, like, the recruiting and, like, these guys, like, what are they asking for coming out of high school? What are they looking for? Are they even prioritizing, like, academics? Like, what are those conversations like with parents? Like, just let us hear a little bit from you, like, what that's like.
Yeah, I think, you know, now the biggest thing is, and the main priority of a lot of people is, the hardest part is also, if you're going to be a blue blood school, like those top tiers, you know, you got your Alabama, you got your Ohio State, you got all those type of guys, you know, that are talking top money, and even Missouri bringing a lot of money to the table. You look at it as, the biggest thing is, you're trying to not only recruit the high school kids that are coming in, right, but you're trying to retain your roster each year. And so, just for an example, if you have a starting running back who just went for 1,600 plus yards, the guy only came, he was a transfer that came in from a smaller school. You give him low end dollars. I'm not throwing real numbers out here. I'm throwing hypothetical numbers because I don't want to talk about somebody else's, you know, financial situation. But say you give a guy $250,000 to transfer in from a G5 school. Well, you're also trying to recruit a kid who might be coming into high school who wants the same amount of money. But this kid comes in, he goes off his year for you at Missouri for that 250 number that you gave him initially. And now he's remarketed himself because he just had a great year, right? And so now that number has now changed from 250, what you initially paid him, to now it could go to 700,000 a year. So now you're now looking at a situation as, you're adding 500,000 to him, but you just promised the high school kid that he might be getting the 250 or 300. So now the budget has flipped, but it's flipped in a way you didn't know it was going to flip, because the guy just went out for 1,600 yards, you know? So it's a evolving thing, that it's almost where you have no idea what you might be needing to pay a kid next year. And so you have to have ways and to go around it where you can go outside and get third party money, or also just know that you need to have money in your budget for guys that you're going to have to maybe keep for the next season. And so that's the biggest thing, I think, in NIL right now, is schools having to re-up on the kids that they already have on their roster, but you have to have enough money to be able to still go and recruit high level kids. And that's the hardest part about it.
Yeah, no, I think that's some great insight there, because, like, that's something I don't even really think about when I think about NIL. Because when I'm thinking about NIL, I'm thinking about, oh, like, how much we got to pay these guys out of high school or the transfer, right? Like, I'm bringing in these transfers and I got to pay X amount of money. But you just said it, like, every single year, every offseason, you have to recruit your own roster. And it's like, you had a guy who went off, or a guy who feels like they had a really good year. Like, I need more money. And it might not be the budget. And so, yeah, I think it's just a lot that really goes into it now, for real.
Yep. And then that's the thing. Like, you could, now you could, it might not be in the budget. And now you lose your star player. Now you got to go find another guy to come in and replace him. And he might be asking for the same. So now you might bring in a kid who asked for the same amount that you just lost a kid for. And then he might not even be as talented. So it's a lot going on with the NIL stuff. And it's hard to you have to have a lot of people in the building that can collaborate and wrap around it. But
yeah, for sure. You know, and before we move on quickly from NIL, man, just any crazy stories as far as NIL, like as far as like parents asking for anything, a recruit asking for anything, names or any.
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is for me, like, and being in the space and hearing like crazy numbers and stuff like that, like, it's mainly the biggest problem are the people who are in your building. So you can have guys, you can have a freshman who might have just got paid, let's say, $250,000, $300,000 for the first year, and he might have redshirted. This kid might have redshirted, got six-figure numbers, but now the kid at the end of the season is saying he wants to transfer and leave because the numbers getting reduced $50,000, $60,000. So he might have went from 250 to 200 or 300 to 250, but you want to leave and go try and make more money, and you just redshirted and it made six figures. That's probably the craziest thing that these, like, that's the delusion that is going on right now, is kids trying to market themselves. And then you got the schools who are willing to say, yeah, we'll pay this kid who just redshirted last year. Well, what are we doing? You know, so
that's wild. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, nah, that's wild. Like, how can you not even have no film and be like, yeah, I need some more money or I'm out of here. So
yeah, are you mad you getting reduced? You're getting reduced because you didn't play. So
yeah, no, I feel you. All right, here we go. Shifting gears a little bit, right? Because you and I, we opted out together, right? Back in 2020.
Yep.
Gaden and I sitting out together, what was supposed to be both of our senior years. I've touched on it a little bit, but like from your perspective, how was that? And like, what were you going through? What were you feeling? And like sitting out your senior year, like what was supposed to be your senior year, your last go at it, what was that?
Yeah, like? I think, I mean, it was a shocker. It was a whirlwind, you know. I mean, everybody, of course, COVID was a big deal for everybody in this country and everything that was going on. And it hit people in all different ways, whether it was family members, whether it was yourself, or whether it was, you know, whatever you had going on that associated with COVID. And I think for me during that time, just when we got back on campus and how it all unfolded. And it's crazy because just part of the story, we get back on campus. I don't know if you probably hit on it before, or, you know, we get back. I think it was around June that time, and we all get tested. Everybody, you know, that was the protocol. Nobody could enter into the dorms. Nobody could enter any building without getting tested first. So we all come back from our respective homes, get tested. And at the time, I tested negative, so I was good. And then, you know, my roommate tests positive, and so now you got to retest because obviously we had just encountered each other within that 24, 48 hour time frame. And so I go in, I retest, and now I pop positive in a 48 hour time. So you get, obviously COVID was big, you get it that quick, right? And so now I go in quarantine for 3 days. They tell me I'm positive, quarantine for 14 more days. And that experience in itself was crazy because they had us all over campus in these big dormitories, and we was just locked in, basically locked in there for a long time, right? And so couldn't go nowhere. Obviously, the coaches were checking in on it. They was bringing us food, but you was basically jailed up for 14, 17, to however many days we had to be quarantined. And so that could take a toll on somebody. I mean, you're in there. You're seeing all these reports online. You see people dying from COVID. You see all these type of stories. So that thing start hitting you emotionally. Like, and at the same time, you locked in, so you can't go nowhere. You can't do anything. And so all these things are going through your mind. And now you see your teammates are back working out. You're like, man, I'm gonna be behind. They tell me I gotta wait another week and a half to get back incorporated into the program, all that type of stuff. And so I finally get back out there after a few weeks and whatnot. And then, you know, we're in fall camp, and I get another type symptom that is COVID symptom or whatever. So then they tell me I got to sit out another 5 days. So now I didn't miss a whole week of camp, whatever. And now I'm like, man, I can't keep dealing with this. So I end up opting out. And it was probably the craziest experience of my life, because at this time, I don't know what's going to happen after this. I'm thinking, I mean, I don't know if I'll be able to come back. I don't know what's going to happen. Season goes by and, you know, we were just there at that point. And so, you know, having a best friend like Chan, you know, and that's when you go back to the brotherhood, you know, having a strong soldier behind you. And you know, that day when I opted out, I cried, man, because I thought I was never going to play ball again. Like, I'm on the phone with my parents. I'm boo-hooing. And, you know, probably about a week or so go by, and I'm talking to Chan. I'm like, man, how you dealing with this? How you, you know? And so, you know, he tell me he's working out. He going, you know, to do this every day, getting up, you know, working out twice a day. I said, man, can I just join you? You know, and we locked in and we did that thing. And we was there every day grinding it out. And the thing is, not only was it helping me out working out to get out the house, but at the same time, man, it was, I knew I had a brother for the rest of my life, you know, through that situation and through, you know, COVID and all that type of stuff, because at the end of the day, I didn't know, you know, nobody was in my corner. I felt like at that point, my parents and family was at home. You know, we couldn't go in the building. I had nobody else to count on. And so, you know, doing that every day and working out literally every single day, that whole fall, all the way back until, you know, once, you know, obviously Miles and I gets fired and Harrison comes back, we working out every day until we figure out that we can come back, you know, and play that next season. But that just tell you, you know, how good of a brother I had. And he helped me get through probably one of the toughest situations in my life. And I always remember that to the day I die. And that's why I know I can count on him for the rest of my life. And that's the biggest takeaway from COVID that happened for me. And it's something, you know, that I never, you know, take for granted, you know, so.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you for sure, because I think about that all the time, like just being back in that space, and I put myself back in that time and that time period. And like you said, like we obviously had family and stuff, but like it was so isolating, like that feeling, right? Like you can't go in the building, like, you know what I'm saying? You can't, and like, it ain't no fault to our teammates, but like you out of sight, you out of mind. Like they got, they got going on, they got sticks to pass, they got practice, they got games they playing. So like, they not checking in on you. Like, and it's not to, you know, point fingers at nobody like that, but it's like I said, out of sight, out of mind.
Yes.
So not hearing from no teammates. So you feel XL from the team. And you know, in my situation, like from the time I told Malzahn I was opting out, that was the last time I ever spoke to him to this day.
Yeah.
And so you get that from the coaches as well. And like, that's not he was a phenomenal coach. You know what I'm saying? But like just that whole situation, the way it played out, like a lot of people really don't know what it was like. And then you get that from the fans as well. Like you quit this, that, and the third. Yeah. So it was like, it's a lot going on, bro. And so like,
to have
somebody in your corner, bro, like to every day to get up with you and like to help you stay accountable, bro. Like, yeah, I would have never made it past. It would have never been no NFL dreams like without Skew. So like, if I wouldn't have been able to stay consistent and like stay with somebody and have somebody to hold me accountable and be in my corner like that, I definitely wouldn't have made it through that situation for sure. So I definitely get with you on that.
Yeah. And I think that the biggest thing was like people don't understand. And that's why I love Chan so much, because we actually worked, like we was pushing each other. It wasn't, you know, a lot of guys say they working out, say they go and do this and that, but we actually holding ourselves to a high standard of actually trying to be better for each other and for ourselves in that time. And we was actually working, you know, and that was the biggest thing that we took away from it, you know. Yeah.
So, just shifting gears to the present time right quick before we wind it down, man, just the current state of Auburn football. Obviously, you've been working at another SEC school, but obviously, you know, just through the talks we've had, and I know you still locked in with everything that's still going on. And so just from afar, like what do you think we need to do to turn it around this season?
You know, and obviously I had the chance to work when we got done playing and work on staff with the Harrison period in that time. And then obviously, you know, they went through the free cycle and now they're, you know, in the goalless period. And I think, you know, the biggest takeaways that I get, and also just playing against them, you know, in the past few years, and also just being a part of playing there and the place that Auburn is, I think for, you know, you have to love Auburn for who Auburn is. And that's 100% my belief in it, because, and when I say that, you know, when it says Auburn is going to take care of Auburn and Auburn is family and everybody, you know, you have to buy in. That has to be genuine. It can't be faked. It can't be scripted. It can't be something that you look at as something in the clouds. It's just being said. It has to really be meaningful to yourself. And that has to be everybody associated with that program from top to bottom. And so I think as long as that is taken care of and that's where everybody's headspace is and that's the culture that they build around there, then I think, you know, they'll be all right. I think, you know, better days ahead, definitely for Auburn, if that can get turned around. But that's the biggest thing, is you have to buy in to Auburn. You have to buy in to the place that you're at and know that it means something to you. Because at the end of the day, if you can't do that at that place, then you won't be successful, you know. So
for sure, right on, for sure. And so obviously in closing, man, just we did everything together, right? From you know, sports,
events,
women's and men's basketball games. We went to gymnastics, softball, going to eat, going to parties. Like, I mean, you name it, we did it. And so it was to the point where if we weren't together, they was asking where the other one was.
Facts.
Like, we did everything together. So like, just in, when you think about Auburn, when you think about your time there, like what's, I know there's a lot of memories, but like, what are if not one of your favorite memories from your time at Auburn?
Man, you know, it's crazy because it's hard to pick one from Auburn, because Auburn brings you so much. Obviously, the COVID situation, that was big, mainly because of the hardship. But I think, man, nothing can surpass the 2017 season, even though I was part of a red shirt year that year. But mainly because it brought the good and bad for me. Yeah, I redshirted, but that season was – it was a welcoming for us, and it was a brotherhood, and obviously we won, which helped a lot too. But that first year was really what did it for me. Like all those memories, the beginning memories that we had, and then just going through that year, you know, experiencing everything that we experienced, beating two number one teams and all that type of stuff. But that was probably the biggest thing is that year. And then obviously when my last year was good too, because I played more for me personally, but also just, you know, when it's your first year and your last year hit different, you know, in an aspect of knowing it's about to end. And then in the beginning, it's like everything was getting started. So I think those are the two takeaway things for me, just personally, because that last year it was what it was. But I also know it was a year that, you know, a lot of people didn't see, that was a good year for the team, but for me, it was a great ender for me. But
yeah, no, I agree, especially after everything we went through. And so, yeah, bro, I appreciate you coming on today for real. You know, we locked in for life.
I appreciate you having me. Yeah,
sure. And one thing I always admired about you though is you never let outside circumstances and situations affect who you were as a person. And that's like a testament to, you know, your great parents. I know your pops, my Dukes. Family, and so you know, it's always love. And I just appreciate you coming on today, man.
I appreciate you having me, man. All these things been rolling, man. It's good talks, man. I'm proud of you, man, because you know, we talked about you doing this, and that's one thing for us. We always talked about, we always, you know, set our foot on it and got it done. So you know, that's the biggest thing. So man, hey, keep them rolling, man. Hey, it's gonna take off for sure.
Yes, sir. No, I appreciate you, man. And so this was episode 12 of Landing on the Plains. If you like this episode, make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And as always, War Eagle.
War Eagle, man.